All right, episode 29. This is AP and Spence. We are two lawyers talking about college sports and sports in general. AP, how was your week?
I had a good week, man. This was a interesting week. My wife is a veteran, 8 years, two tours in Iraq, was in the Marines, and we had Memorial Day. Sad, reverent day, but an important day on Monday, as you know.
Right.
And so that's been on her mind, but it was a good week.
That's right. Well, and on top of that, you know, last week we brought up the fact that starting June 1st, a lot of colleges were going to start allowing their kids to come back for voluntary practices or voluntary workouts. Initially, it was only football and men's and women's basketball, but what happened this last week?
Yeah, they went ahead and opened it up to all sports, which makes sense. We wondered about that. Why would they just make it those three sports? We thought, well, money. But then right after that, they made it open to all sports. And so, yeah, so June 1, voluntary workouts, get those kids in those gyms voluntarily working out.
Yeah, so what does that mean? I mean, you know, so I hear that phrase all the time, voluntary workouts. Can coaches participate? Or what are the limitations and the restrictions?
Yeah, so voluntary workouts has to be just that. So there's no reporting back to any coaches. Coaches can't observe. They can't record it. They can't watch it. They can't coach. They can't participate. They can't require student athletes to be there. They can't reward or punish them for doing it or not doing it. It's literally just that. It's just, you know, you got Sarah, the soccer player, and she decides, I'm going to leave my dorm room or my apartment, and I'm going to head down there and lift some weights and run to the treadmill and then come home. Fully on my own. Nobody's pressuring me to do it. No one's requiring me to do it. No coaches are there. Nobody knows on my staff whether I was there or not. That's a true voluntary workout. Anything beyond that, it becomes required workouts. And right now, we can't have required workouts, Spence.
Right. So, well, let me ask you this. So, like, you know, if there's a captain of the men's basketball team that gathers all the basketball players together and says, everybody's coming to this practice.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that allowed? I mean, if that's run by the captain, a student athlete, not a coach, not an administrator, but like the student athlete saying, hey, I'm going to require you guys to come here. Is that any different?
So I'll break down the permissible and impermissible way that can happen. So permissible, the captain's hyper-motivated. It's somebody like a leader, a true leader like me, right? Like I'm the leader and I'm coming in. I'm like, we're getting your guys' butts in shape. Sarah, freshman, you know, oh, it's going to be guys. So it's going to be Bill, the freshman, and Bob, the sophomore. Get your butts out of that, you know, quit playing PlayStation 4. We're heading down to the gym. We need to get better and win because we were 0-12 last year.
Right.
And I get their butts there. I don't tell anybody about it. Nobody made me do this. They voluntarily decide to follow my natural leadership abilities.
As anyone would.
Anyone would. Yeah. And I'm spotting for them and I'm pushing them and they have the workout of their life. And we go back home. That's true. That's totally fine. Here's what's not fine. Coach calls me and says, hey, Aaron, I know you're a natural leader and everybody follows everything you do. I want you to ask Bill and Bob to get off their butts and get to the workout, force them to go, and report back to me. Let me know how it went. And if they don't go, let me know. No problem, coach. I'll get that done for you. Hey, guys, and then I take them. That is impermissible. Now you're being led by the coach. Coaches are paying attention. They're getting reported back to. Can't happen. That's a fine line, but it needs to be truly voluntary, no pressure. The pressure can come from the students themselves as long as no staff or coaches are involved.
So the captain says, let's go get this thing done. It's totally fine.
Totally fine.
But captain says, hey, coach told me to do this. Violation.
Yeah, or if he doesn't, if he kind of hides that fact, but the coach is really doing it, saying, hey, captains, I want you to let me know who's in the gym, who's not in the gym. And then here's how I would teach that at USC, because that's hard to monitor and stuff. So I would say, hey, coaches, don't do that, because all it's going to take is one kid turning on you. And said, I'm going to tell compliance that the coach has been kind of putting me in this weird spot. And then they can out you. So don't put yourself in that spot, coaches. Don't tell them to report back to you. Don't require it. Just tell your captains, hey, captains, take the lead with the team. You guys know what that means. Take the lead. Do all you can. I don't want to know about it, but just take the lead. Something general like that's probably fine.
Gotcha. And for these voluntary workouts, generally, I mean, we've walked around some of these college campus workout rooms, and they are just incredible.
Yeah. Like
every weight you could ever imagine, every exercise, anything you could even imagine is going to be there. And basically, when you're giving these kids voluntary workouts, they can just come in and do whatever they want, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've always been someone that's like less yakking, more racking, and I expect the kids to do that too. They walk in, they start racking. You know, they're going to start doing benching and running. The problem is these apartments and dorm rooms, they don't have all this equipment.
Right.
That's why it's so important for them to be able to come there and work out.
And a lot of these kids won't have it. You know, won't have that type of stuff at home even, right?
Not at home.
Or
yeah.
Or even that kind of an access to anything.
Yeah, maybe just some dumbbells in their garage. But
yeah, especially with gyms being shut down right now through the coronavirus. Stuff. So
that's exactly right, and you want them to have access and start voluntary working out so they can get their body going before the required workouts start. We don't want required workouts to start immediately and the kids have been sitting around playing PlayStation for 3 months and then they're going to get hurt. And so get out in the gym, start working out, stretch out, get on that treadmill, and that's a great sign that now all sports can do that starting June 1, which is a few days away. And they're going to get out there. No coaches. You can't be there. You can't watch it. You can't report back. It's going to be a violation. I'll bet you now, Spencer, there's going to be at least one coach that's going to get in trouble in the country because they're going to be watching it. They're going to be reporting on it, requiring it. Something's going to happen.
Well, now, interesting you bring that up because, you know, we live in Oregon, right? So that's where we are. We're based in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, yeah.
And Oregon has a some still pretty harsh rules on what can and can't happen.
Yeah.
In gyms specifically, larger groups larger than 25.
Yeah.
There's all these phases, phase 1, phase 2. And what it, on our Governor Brown, this last week, what'd she say?
Yeah, Governor Kate Brown is a pretty conservative governor when I think it comes to coronavirus. I mean, she's been very slow with the opening. I mean, there's some count. I mean, Portland is still not even in phase 1 yet. But when it came to college football, there's a lot of rumblings that, you know, Alabama's opening up, Texas is opening up, Ohio's opening up. The Ducks have Ohio State on their schedule. Oregon loves their Ducks. They love their Beavers too, but Duck football is king. And she's feeling a lot of heat. And so she made a statement that said, look, I'm not going to do anything that's going to put the Ducks or Beavers, which she's talking football, at any disadvantage.
Right.
And so she made that pretty clear. She knows the pressure is on Kate Brown that the Oregon Ducks play Ohio State and have every advantage. Because a disadvantage would be if let's say, Oregon students couldn't start voluntary working out and Ohio's fully open and those guys are getting coached and the whole thing. Then the Ohio State comes here and slaughters Oregon, you know, 54-10. It's on Kate Brown. That loss is on Kate Brown.
Not Mario Cristobal.
Not Cristobal.
Not the kids.
Kate Brown.
Okay.
And so I want people to remember that. When Ohio State comes to Oregon, if Oregon loses, it's on Kate Brown. But I think Kate Brown's not going to let it happen. She knows that we got to do everything to keep the Ducks and Beavers, especially the Ducks, competitive. And she's going to do it in a safe way. But she knows we got to get on even field because football is king in America.
That's right. Well, and interestingly, you know, not only is college football and college sports starting these voluntary workouts, but there are rumblings of the NBA starting up, NHL, MLB. And what I've heard so far is that the NHL is going to be coming back, but playoff only. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The NBA has talked about a number of different scenarios, potentially all playing in Orlando, playing, you know, half in Orlando, half in Vegas, but only doing playoffs or maybe having some play-in playoff teams. Because our Blazers, we were only 3.5 games out of the playoffs at the time that the coronavirus hit.
Yeah, Damian Lillard had said that he's not playing if they don't have any chance to go to the playoffs. He's not going to get out there, Damian Lillard, max contract guy, franchise player, and just dribble the ball around in Vegas or Orlando for a couple of weeks to finish out the season and leave. He wants to make the playoffs. And the thing is about the Blazers, they're all healthy now. That would be a super dangerous team for the Lakers to meet. Like, oh, yeah, we weren't very good because we're missing all of our starters. And they're all healed up now, and we're ready to beat your butt.
Yeah.
And the Lakers are going to be in a 7-game grinded out Widowmaker if that happens. And so I think the Lakers don't want any part of the Blazers. The Blazers want a chance at that play-in. And so let's make it happen. Blazers, Lakers, let's go.
All right, let's do it. And on top of the MLB potentially is talking about coming back, Major League Baseball, but only playing an 82-game season. And we're hearing some rumblings about the NFL starting regular time, right?
Yeah, I mean, football's king in America. That's the philosophy. There's coronavirus cuts. Football king is America. The coronavirus and football don't mix. That's oil and water. Football is going to knock through the virus a little bit. It just is. It's king in America, and it's going to happen. I think the NFL is going to happen. College football is going to happen. There might be some later starts. You might have a thinned out crowd. I think Iowa or somebody had said that they might have 30,000 fans in their stadium.
That's right.
You know, that sort of thing. But it's going to happen. Football, you can just bank on that. Football the NFL and college level is going to happen this year. It's just, what's it going to look like? It might be a little later, some lighter fans, but it's happening. And you count on Duck football happening. The Trojans are going to be in Eugene in November. It's going to be a battle of the Titans, and I'm excited.
Let's do it. All right. Well, let's chat with somebody. How about that? So who could we talk to today?
Yeah. Well, I think we should talk to a couple people today. I mean, one, we should talk to Derek Miller.
Okay.
Derek Miller is a football staff member that works at Bowling Green State University. He does recruiting. He's a recruiting coordinator. He knows football. He knows college football. He's got his ear on the pulse of what's going on. And he could probably touch on some of the cuts that are happening. I mean, baseball at Bowling Green eliminated.
That's right.
A big four. And then I think we should talk to an NFL guy, right?
Let's do it.
Let's talk to the Seahawks. The Seahawks, we have Jason Selby. He's a veteran. And this goes in line with veteran and this week being about remembering our heroes that have fallen, defending our country. And he was a 24-year vet, 3 tours in Iraq, a veteran a star. I mean, this is somebody that's really, really important, and he does great things for the community and the Seahawks, and he's got some knowledge as well.
All right, let's go. Let's go to the phones. All right, what does that sound mean, Aaron?
It means we have a caller.
That's right. And this caller, as it always has been, is brought to us by Welch, Bruin & Green. Welch, Bruin & Green is a law firm and based in Portland, Oregon. We specialize in workers' comp, personal injury, social security, disability, and what else?
Collegiate sports law. Basically, we do consulting services for schools, for student athletes, for parents, administrators. Basically, anything a compliance office could do, we could do. Give us a call and we'll help you out.
So how do they get in contact with them?
503-221-0870. That's our law firm phone number. Give us a call. Ask for Aaron or Spencer.
You can also email us at collegesportsattorneys@gmail.com. Or lastly, you can go to our website, www.wbgatty.com, and all of our information is on there. Give us a call. You won't regret it. All right, here we are going to the phones once again. Aaron, who do we have on the phone?
So we have Jason Selby. Jason is a good friend of mine. He's a veteran. He knows my wife, who's also a veteran, and really a person I respect and have a lot of admiration for. And I'll have him talk about himself. But, you know, given this was an important week, you know, and we had Memorial Day on Monday, and we were talking a little bit about the armed forces and veterans and that sort of thing, and that interplay between college and pro sports and the military. And Jason is involved a little bit in sports, and he's got a veteran background, and I'll let him explain kind of how he connects the two and is in some of the things he does now today. And so that we're excited to have him part of our podcast today.
Yeah, Jason, hey, how are you doing?
Hey, good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing all right. Hey, so could you, if you wouldn't mind, just kind of giving us a brief background, your background here for us, so that we can kind of know who we're talking to and kind of where you are right now, what you're doing.
Okay, awesome. My name is Jason Selby, a retired Master Sergeant out of the Marine Corps. Did 24 years, had the opportunity to serve 3 tours in Iraq, 2 in Afghanistan. So been gone a lot. Got a family, 4 kids. So they've seen a lot of the deployments and going off to war, coming back, and different things along those lines. I guess I kind of get lucky because I was an infantry guy, and ended up would come back from combat deployments. I'd get put into a billet that I would be working kind of like at a base level. And during that time was my first interaction with actual sports. I was invited to go be a guest speaker for the LA Clippers. Back in 08-09, which was my first time interacting with professional athletes. And from then on, it kind of just became my thing, where it's like, you know, hey, I enjoy the athletes because they're dedicated to what they're doing, kind of like my Marines are. We'll go to combat, we train, and get ready for that big game. For them, you know, it's train all week, play the game, and right back to training, whereas for us, it's train for months on end for the possibility of going into a big game. But yeah, and then in 2010, I moved up here to Washington, moved over to the Marine Barracks up here in Silverdale, which is where I actually met Randy, your wife. She would say a few things on how we interacted, depending on the day. she was awesome. She actually taught me a lot. So, you know, it's awesome to have veterans, regardless of your rank and everything, that, you know, you can continue to learn from your juniors, which is similar to, you know, your freshmen or your rookies when they come into sports, being able to come in and seeing the veterans, try to coach them, but then also teaching the veterans a few things. When I retired in 2015, I had been doing part-time work with the Seahawks and the Sounders doing their game day presentation. And in 2015, when I actually retired, they both offered me a part-time position, both Seahawks and Sounders, working game presentation, and then also assisting with the military and veterans organizations that would come in to hold the flag or to do different things. For example, I took the Sounders in 2014 to JBLM here and allowed them to interact with our Air Force and our Army, touching weapons. And, you know, professional athletes are big kids. They see guns and they just get super excited and, you know, they act like they've never seen it before.
Yeah, it's, I mean, first of all, yeah, so Jason, so my wife, Randy Price, was, she did 8 years in the Marines, two tours in Iraq, and yeah, she has nothing but respect for you, Jason, and I think that she learned a lot from you, and now she's taking it out on me at home. So, yeah.
Well, that's okay, because we got her back this season when we surprised her with the salute to service moment.
Yeah, so we have a cool story with that, actually. Yeah, so we we took Randy, my wife, up to Seattle, and I kind of had to break it to her on the way. Like, at first, it was going to be a weekend in Seattle, but I thought, well, you know, I better, you know, because we're going to be heading over to the stadium, I better just tell her, hey, once we get out there, we're going to go to a Seahawks game. We got some cool tickets, and it was a nice surprise. Well, it ended up being she like did the chant Seahawks to start the game. She was on the field. She was honored. She was super nervous, but it was like she had no time to be nervous because she found out about it on the field. And so it was, she beat me up for it for about a week after. And I think she's still mad at me, but loves it. She loved the experience. We said we have coins from it. We got a 12 flag. We got some good videos and pictures. It was a time of our life. We got to sit on the sidelines, and she was just honored. And I mean, she talks about it fondly to this day. And so Jason had a big part of that. And that's part of what you do, right? I mean, you're able to really honor veterans, really deserving veterans, with cool experiences that they would probably otherwise never be able to get it, right? I mean, you get them on the field. They can shake some hands, that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And the great thing about most of the NFL teams is most of them have a former service member on their full-time payroll. For us, it's Nino Gray, former soldier out of JBLM, Purple Heart recipient. And then we've also got Mike Flood, who is a Coast Guard pilot. And both of them, they are huge into the military. So they go out to the VA homes, the veteran homes. They bring the Seagals and the Seahawks out there, the Seahawk dancers and the Seahawk players out there to meet the veterans, to interact with the veteran. During our 12 tour, we normally will make at least one stop into a veteran's home, into the veterans' homes, like a Retzel here in Port Orchard in Washington, where the older veterans who normally wouldn't get to get out and see the players and stuff, you know, the players get to get in there and actually interact with them. And to see their faces, it's just phenomenal. It's awesome to see. But along with that, they also work with the local bases in the area to get players and to get the team down there to do, whether it be a pregame party or it be an away video or a show and stuff like that. They're all about the veterans and they're all about the military. And they want the military to be part of the organization because they understand they're part of the community. You know, they travel so much, they want them to feel like they're at home.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. When I was at USC, we would use some SEAL techniques and different techniques to train. I mean, our athletes would lean on the military to help kind of train them, both from a leadership perspective and the physical components of exercise. I mean, the military knows how to do it, man. I mean, you got a $100 million organization, whether it's the Seahawks or USC, and they're leaning on the military to teach them leadership, structure, physicality, all of it, you know, discipline, organization. I mean, that's an organization that's been around for a couple hundred years, so I think they know what they're doing.
Sometimes.
Yeah, so, which is really cool. And also even the swag and stuff. I see, like, you know, the military and sports, whether it's collegiate level or pro, they do a lot of those, like, military kind of appreciation style, you know, hoodies and hats and that sort of thing, which is really cool stuff. I mean, how important is it, do you think, Jason, in your opinion, to connect the military, veterans, and pro sports, just in America in general?
I think it's huge, because you think about it. Every kid growing up has their favorite professional team or the favorite college team growing up. And then, you know, when you join the military, you're always traveling and stuff like that. So to have organizations represent or to recognize the service members with the hoodies or the hats or doing the flag details on the field and stuff like that, the greatest thing is watching these service members come to the sideline and holding the flag, standing on regardless what side of the field they're on, you know, home or visitor, and they're just in awe. And then you see the players kind of shake their hands. Like you said, the training aspect of everything, the discipline, you get so much news about all the negative and the negative. There's so much positive when it comes to service members and the professional and college players.
Yeah.
Yeah, there seems to be a tremendous amount of mutual respect that goes on. Every time I've seen it, there's a lot of honor and respect between both parties, right? I mean, that's something that's evident. It comes across on the TV, at least, as we're watching.
Yeah, it definitely does.
I mean, we got flags, we got flyovers, we've got fireworks, the national anthem. I mean, I know when I go to a game, I mean, man, that those patriotic feelings, those pride of country, and the appreciation you have for those service members that sacrifice their lives and their bodies and their families for the greater good of our country, it really connects, and that's really, really cool. I'm so glad. I think that's a win in our society to have sports and the military connected like they are. So Jason, first of all, thank you for your service and thank you for what you do for the Seahawks and the Sounders.
Thank you for your support.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I'm a big fan of you and everything you do. Have been for a long time. You're a good friend. I guess on a final note, I know you're super busy. It's a Friday. We'll let you go. And I thank you so much for being here. But do you think we're going to see some Seahawks football this fall? And if so, what do you think it might look like?
So my opinion is I think that we will see. We're very optimistic that we'll see football this year. I think that it may get pushed back just a little bit because some of the states are opening up, taking more time to open up to be a little bit safer. So I can see maybe our preseason being cut a little bit. But I think the fans will be back in the stadiums cheering on their teams and cheering on the Seahawks and Sounders here real soon.
Oh man, I love it! I know. Right, when are they supposed to start?
So no word has been put out yet. We're optimistic that we'll continue the season. I'm hoping by probably August timeframe, the way Washington's opening up and the rest of the state. So we're hoping to have soccer back on the pitch here in August and. You know, that'll be about the time that the Seahawks start. So hopefully it'll give us a little bit of something to go to and experience since we've been cooped up for so long.
I think so. I think that's going to help America open back up and feel good about things. You get people going to games and getting out and sports on TV and that kind of release, you know, of like, we're all in this together. We beat this kind of virus. Let's not be afraid. Let's move forward and see what we can do. And in a healthy, safe manner, you know, But I'm so excited, man. Well, we're gonna be rooting on the Seahawks like always. Let's keep in touch, Jason, and we'll talk some USC football and some Seahawks football, and maybe we can get a trip up there to Seattle sometime this year.
Yeah, we'll definitely get that all coordinated for you guys.
All right, sir. Thank you so much, Jason. We'll talk to you soon, man.
All right, thanks, guys.
Bye. Wow, what a great guy. I mean, you know, you can just hear the love that he has for the country, and then just the connection that he wants to make between service and then these professional athletes.
Yeah, that was, I mean, that's Jason Selby. I mean, that's somebody that's working for the Seahawks and the Sounders. He's a veteran. He did 24 years. What do you say, three tours?
That's right.
I mean, that's a military hero, actually. And now he's doing amazing things for his veteran community. He's given them great experiences at the Sounders and the Seahawks. And he's never stopped serving his country. And that was really cool to kind of connect that. And this week, as it's a reverent, sad day, but it's that whole idea of Memorial Day and veterans and honoring their connection to sports, which is huge. And we thought it was really important this week that we kind of talk about that and highlight some of that of just that veteran presence with sports.
Yeah. Well, we've also had a lot of other things going on this past couple of weeks. And one thing that was really interesting and kind of sad was that, you know, Bowling Green State University, who are the...
Yeah, I do know this one. The Bowling Green Sun Devils.
That's incorrect. They're the Falcons.
Yeah, oh, man. There's no way they were going to be Sun Devils because there's no other Sun Devils.
There's the Arizona State Sun Devils, of course.
Other than them, right? Right. Can you name another Sun Devil?
I can't name another Sun Devil. I can name some Blue Devils. Do you want some Blue Devils?
I'll name two Blue Devils.
Okay, go ahead.
Duke.
Yeah.
And then the number two would probably be Alcorn State.
Oh, that's incorrect. Alcorn State Braves. But it's the... let's see, it's Central Connecticut. They are the Blue Devils, Central Connecticut University.
But okay. All right.
But anyway,
that
so
that's impressive. Yeah. And I digress.
All right.
Okay.
So the Falcons, they are the Bowling Green State Falcons. Recently, just cut their baseball program.
You know who cuts baseball? And no offense to the other sports,
right?
But that's unprecedented. One of the Big Four, right?
A lot, right? That's exactly right. So a lot of schools that we're seeing, and it's super sad. No matter who gets cut,
absolutely.
But
yeah.
We're seeing swimming team programs get cut. We're seeing tennis. We're seeing men's golf and cross country, and then you know even UConn is talking about cutting eight of their smaller Olympic sports.
Yeah, Olympic sports. Not that they're not important, but they're just not generally making money and that sort of thing.
But Bowling Green has had a historically very successful baseball program. So it's really unprecedented that they're canceling this. So I think we should talk to somebody about that. Who should we talk to?
Yeah, I mean, we could talk to Derek Miller. Derek Miller works with the football program there at Bowling Green. He's a good guy, I worked with at USC, and I think he could probably comment on that sad situation there at Bowling Green and their baseball team. And I understand there's a swell of support the community, right?
That's right. In fact, we found out that they've raised over $900,000 to try to bring that baseball team program back, which hopefully happens. But it's up to the university. But let's chat with Derek and get some of his thoughts.
Yeah, let's talk to Derek Miller. Yeah, he works with football there at Bowling Green. Let's go to the phones.
Aaron, here we are going to the phones, and who do we have on the phones today?
Well, today we have Derek Miller. Derek and I worked together when I was at USC. I was in compliance working with football, and he was part of the recruiting staff at USC for the football department. And just a really hardworking guy, really smart. Came with a good pedigree. You know, he's been around. I'll let him talk about himself, but he's been around at some good programs. He knows recruiting. He knows people. He's really smart, and so he was able to really add some good value. It was a shame that USC lost him, but he's been at some other good places, and I've just kind of tracked his career a little bit. I know he's got a bright future ahead, and so I was fortunate enough to get him tracked down, and I just wanted to kind of find out about what he's doing and ask him a few questions, and he agreed.
That sounds great. Hey, Derek, how you doing?
Hey, Spencer. Hey, Aaron.
So thanks a lot for being on our podcast today, and the first question we always like to ask is just kind of give us a brief rundown of kind of your history, right? So like where you played, where you went to school, what your where you've been over your career, and where you are currently.
Yeah, of course. So really, the football journey started for me as a young kid growing up in Ohio, and right around the time that you start getting into football, the Cleveland Browns had moved to Baltimore and there wasn't a team. So I gravitated to Brett Favre and the Green Bay Packers there in the mid-90s. And kind of that's where the love of football started, you know, playing in the backyard. And then when you can get into the more competitive space, started from there and was just an okay player. I wouldn't even put myself in the good category. And but always knew that I wanted to coach. And then as that moved on, the evaluation process and the growth process of players and talent development always intrigued me. So I went to Bowling Green State University, and while there, hunted down an opportunity to work in the football organization. Dave Clawson was the head coach there at the time. He's now at Wake Forest, and he got that program rolling at Bowling Green. And kind of the first, I'd say, obstacle that came up, and anyone that's young that's listening, is like, you have to put yourself out there and hunt down an opportunity.
Yeah, right.
And what I did, I messaged the director of football operations at the time and said, hey, I'd love to help. And he said, well, we're full up here, but here's the email address for the equipment guy. So I emailed the equipment guy, Brian, and said, yep, come to our winter workout at the field house tomorrow when we're working out at 5:30. So I show up in my polo with a resume, and he said that, you know, I hand it to him. Hey, I'm here. And he goes, we're not that formal. And kind of, that was the first day. And then from then on out, first job, we were stocking the Nesquik and doing the laundry and volunteer. And Coach Clawson can be a little bit intimidating. So when the time came to get assignments of who you were going to be with at practice, I said, I'll do that. You know, I'm wanting to coach one day. So I had the pleasure of carrying the bullhorn and helping to run practice and the clock and see a great coach be organized and motivate on the field.
That's awesome. So how long were you at Bowling Green? Did you do that just through your undergrad years, and then did you go somewhere else?
Yep, through my undergrad, and then a stroke of luck came along, and Austin Thomas, who's now at Baylor, the senior associate athletic director, came. He was with Lane Kiffin at USC, and he'd come to Bowling Green for 3 weeks. As the director of player personnel, in the exact same job I hold today. And so he became a mentor of mine. I worked with him as an undergrad for three weeks, but then stayed in touch and got an internship at LSU a year and a half after meeting him. So went and did an internship at LSU and was hired on after the internship. Drove down to LSU day after my last final.
Wow.
And just said, I'm going to make this work. I didn't even have a where I was staying when I went down there. I just hopped in the car. My mom's like, I said prayers the whole way, 17 hours, and found a hotel to stay in, and then found a subleaser, and, you know, it was off from there. And then kind of followed along with Austin when he went to USC that year. We ended up going to the Rose Bowl, and then kind of got a call back to go back to LSU. And then life coming full circle, an opportunity to come back to Bowling Green in the chair that I had my first cubicle outside of.
Wow.
And a chance for a university that I'm so passionate about and I love so much to really put my stamp on this program along with our head coach. And I can't thank Coach Loeffler enough for this opportunity, a dream opportunity in my sports journey that not a lot of people get to experience. It's coming back to where you did your undergrad and where you got your start.
Yeah, Derek, I can kind of recognize what you talk about there. USC is where I went to college, and I started off my compliance career at Oregon State, and then when USC went under sanctions, I got a call and came to USC, and it is special kind of working. You have that roots, you know, those roots there, that history, and that's kind of special, you know, and so I can totally relate to that in a different way, but same idea, you know. I'm curious, because you've been at some cool spots all over, you know, when you're dealing with football, do the programs do it generally the same, or like whether it's recruiting, practicing, procedures, or are they wildly different? You know, I ask because, like, in the compliance world, I would start off at Oregon State, and it was completely different than USC. The resources, the staffing, the approach. I was just curious your take, because you've had a kind of a breadth of experiences, and you can kind of draw from that.
Yeah, it's all the same to me, and I think a lot of people would say that it's Groundhog Day. You can probably, no matter where you've been, say this is probably what 98% of the teams are going to be doing at this particular moment, whether it's the evaluation period, whether it's, you know, in season, even down to the game prep and what, you know, how many periods you're going to run. Everyone's going to have an individual period. It's like you're playing the same song, but you just play maybe a different instrument. You know, you just sounds a little different, might look a little different, but you're doing the same thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. What do you recognize is when you're in a program that's really rocking and rolling and really winning, they're getting recruits, they're getting wins on the field, versus maybe a program that's struggling a little bit? I mean, does it come down just to raw talent? Is it X's and O's? Is there intangibles? What do you notice just as an observer? I'm curious.
I think you need talent, and that goes along with, I think, the philosophy of any team builder is you want height, weight, speed. You know, football is a game of physics. You know, bigger, faster, stronger, you want that. So you need that to be continually successful. But you see those program builders, like Coach Clawson did, and like we've seen at the Boise State and what, you know, Peterson was able to go along and do at Washington, to build a power, you need that synergy and belief and that relentlessness to just every day get a little bit better. And there's that fundamental belief across the building and that excitement from student workers all the way on up to the head coach. And when it's rolling, gosh, people just love coming to work, and that passion comes out and the players feel it. Practices have energy. There's just more pop
all
the way through.
That's awesome. We're on the phone here with Derek Miller, who's the Director of Player Personnel and Recruiting and the Recruiting Coordinator for Bowling Green University, Bowling Green State University, I should say. Derek, you know, obviously with this coronavirus and they've extended the recruiting dead period out to July 31st, how is that affecting you as far as a recruiting coordinator?
Right. It's been a strain on, I think, recruiting coordinators across the country. And I think anyone would be lying if they said that they weren't just kind of holding on and having to take this as it comes. And it can change by the week. You know, we find out, you know, I just a couple of weeks ago, it was going to be documenting, like, we're doing a virtual visit. Well, I can't send the invite because I'm not accountable caller. So I'm so used to being able to step in there and help coaches out. But in this instance, I had to coordinate with our accountable callers and our permissible callers to even set up virtual tours and how we're going to log those. So it's changed the process. But you know what? I think football coaches and recruiting coordinators around the country have done a great job of adapting and showing that you can take the show on the road a little bit, on the airwaves, and get really good information to these players and their parents.
Yeah, it's interesting how things have had to adapt a little bit, from the rules to the procedures and how you get your jobs done. I think a lot of people around the country, no matter what profession they're in, maybe have had to do a little bit of that, Zoom calls and different things, and that's a challenge, you know. But, I feel like football staff are pretty adaptable people. They're creative people that can kind of adapt to new changes. Hey, I was curious. What's the staff look like there at Bowling Green? I mean, do you have a large recruiting staff? Is it just a few people? What's the kind of the makeup of it?
Well, it's we have one recruiting director, and that's me, and our operations team will step in a little bit. That's two people. And I think it's common across a lot of the group of five teams where our video coordinator is pretty hands-on, especially now with this, with these rules and Zoom calls. They're not out there filming practice like they would, but man, Jake Tepp here has been so helpful for our entire staff with technology. It's unbelievable.
Oh yeah. We're
a small staff here, and you really have to just step up and add value every single day. And that's the way that we've been able to keep this boat going across on top of the water, not sink.
Yeah. Having understanding of technology right now is a big plus. I'm sure that's a challenge from some older staffs, you know? I mean, I don't know that for sure, but I'm just kind of guessing. So, Derek, what would you say your recruiting philosophy is, if you have one? You know, when you're approaching, you know, you guys are in a battle over a kid and you got three other schools, four other schools, and maybe you're trying to reach for the moon on a kid that maybe, you know, you think, well, I don't know if we have much of a chance. I mean, you know, some are, you know, we're just going to pepper them with a lot of, you know, love, you know, or some we're going to start early. I mean, what's your philosophy on how to get to track some of those top talents to get to Bowling Green?
Right. At no matter what level of football you're at, there's going to be a battle for good players. And that's part of the acquisition process. You know, you identify players that you like, and then as a staff, you evaluate them and see how they fit your scheme. But then really the large piece is the acquisition. And that's a long process. And there's not a silver bullet that's going to get it done for every single prospect. So it's a lot of conversation about what we can offer as a university that best fits their needs. I think the best recruiters are great listeners. And I saw that early on at LSU, USC, and even, you know, as a student, as I started to climb up a little bit and be around the coaches more, the guys who could listen and build relationships and form that trust that this was the right place for them really do succeed. So when you're hiring, you really want to find people that are great listeners. I think it's really hard to fail if you're a great listener in any space.
Yeah, I think that's right. I know that when we talked to Alex Collins a while back at Ole Miss, he used to say that Lane Kiffin would just take tons of notes, pages of notes, copious notes, and really learn about a recruit to figure out where their button was to, you know, which is smart. You know, I think you're right. I mean, I think a good lawyer, same idea, being a good listener, yeah. Listening in like meetings and depositions and listening for that key follow-up question, that sort of thing is important. So I think you hit the nail on the head there. What do you think about, this whole voluntary workout stuff starting June 1? And then when do you think you guys can get back to some regular required workouts? Are you hearing anything out there?
I'm kind of hearing what everybody else is hearing. We have plans in place to move the operation outside. And, you know, that brings out, you know, other questions with security and, you know, just all on down the line that you can imagine of, you know, what you got to think about when you're changing the way that you're systematically going to do anything from a safety and security standpoint. And we're kind of just in lockstep with everybody else at our level, and we're waiting for the government to kind of tell us, you know, what they're thinking with it, and then the school administration and work on down so that we can have a safe plan for our players to come back, because that is the most important thing in all of this, is the safety of our players, and that's got to be paramount.
Yeah, absolutely, and obviously that's the most important thing. That seems like that's the most important thing to a lot of programs. And, you know, we found out, or we heard last week or about a week and a half ago that Bowling Green had made a pretty significant cut in that they cut their baseball program which has been around for a long time. And we're just kind of curious about what's the feeling like there around campus, you know, with losing such one of the big four type programs. You know, what are people saying? What are you hearing around campus?
Right. It's a historically successful program. And I will also say that along with that cut, there were several members around the athletic department that also were eliminated. So in coupling that with student athletes who all of a sudden had their sport taken away at the university, and families who during this extremely difficult time are now forced to deal with more uncertainty, there's a double-edged sword to it, to where you're really hurt, because a lot of us in this football program have gotten to know people that lost their jobs, and a lot of our players knew these baseball players. And I know immediately our players were messaging our coaches saying, hey, can any of them walk on, you know, and you feel that outreach and the caring for everybody in the baseball program. And, but from a football standpoint, it's a rallying cry to really give everything that you possibly have. And if you thought you were giving it all, find a little bit more to add some encouragement to this university and to just that fight to inspire. You know, we talk a lot about earning respect, and in everything that you do throughout the day, are you helping to earn respect for this organization? So that when people look at it, it's first class. And that's the way that we have to be, especially now.
Yeah. Yeah. Derek, I mean, gosh, man, we appreciate your time. I mean, we'll let you go. I know it's late there where you're at on a Friday, and we really appreciate your insight and coming in on our small podcast here to give us some your valuable insight. I mean, you're an insider. You've worked in a bunch of different schools. You're a professional. You do everything right. You know, we really hope football goes, right? I mean, not only just from like the student athletes and the coaches and the budget perspective and just us as fans. I mean, you know, it's kind of built into our culture, I think, a little bit of we love football. You know, we want football to happen, but we want to do it safely. We don't want to put people at risk and that sort of thing. But are you hearing any kind of, just as a final thought, any kind of proposals out there of how to get this thing kind of going? And if it does get going, what it might look like?
Right. So that's above my pay grade.
Yeah.
In a lot of the decision-making process. But I can tell you that when I talk to everybody, and even if you're with a group of friends on Memorial Day weekend, you know, the first question they ask is, are we playing?
Yeah.
And I know that there's a money side of it, and I know that there's a passion side of it, and how many people want this and say that we need this. So I feel, from everything that I've heard, it sounds encouraging that a lot of bright people have come together to formulate plans. And you just hope that those plans are adaptable when we get thrown a curveball, which I think you're always going to get when dealing with uncertainty. But everything that I've heard is really, really encouraging.
Oh, man, that's good to hear, man. I hope you guys get going. We're going to be, I know Spence and I will be cheering you on there this fall. And I think Bowling Green has a bright future if you're there. And I'm going to be watching. I think Derek Miller could be an athletic director one day. I feel good about what he does. He knows how to connect to a lot of different people. So, Derek, thank you so much, man, for jumping on this podcast, giving us some insight into your philosophy and your background and football and the community there that's maybe hurting a little bit. But I think there's bright days ahead. And hopefully we can keep in touch, man, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much. This was a blast.
All right. Talk to you later, Derek.
See you, Derek. Thank you.
See you, Aaron. See you, Spencer.
Well, you could hear Derek in his conversation talking about how the baseball kids, you could hear his heart breaking. During that conversation.
Yeah, it's kind of part of what we've been talking about, this coronavirus casualties and how we humanized it last week. I mean, it's a really painful thing. Staff members are lost. Coaches are lost. Student athletes are tossed around. Relationships are lost. I mean, it's a really sad thing. And it's unbelievable. It's one of the big four sports. And I don't mean that when I say big four, I just mean it's not one of the Olympic sports. Those aren't lesser sports. Just historically speaking, those are the sports that usually get cut first.
Right.
They just do. It's really, really, to have a legendary baseball program cut is a really big deal.
Yeah, it really humanized it for me when he said, you know, that he had his student athletes calling up, you know, the school and saying, hey, can some of these baseball guys join the team? I mean, gosh, that my heart broke for those Bowling Green State, you know, athletes.
Yeah, imagine, I mean, your dream is to go to Bowling Green State, you're playing baseball there, and you're just told the program is being cut. What? Where do I go now? What's going to happen next? That's sad.
Well, it's really interesting, like we've said a couple of times, that the community has rallied around this, right? And they've raised almost $1 million, $900,000 last I looked, to try to get this program back on track. be interesting to see if they can do it and see how the university responds to that. But Bowling Green is not the only university that is going through these types of situations. UConn just put out an article last week about how they're talking about potentially eliminating eight sports.
Yeah, and you have to meet a certain threshold. I think it's 16. I'd have to check the manual, but there's a certain number of sports you have to be like a D1, to have D1 football and basketball. You can't just have like two sports in the NCAA manual. So they're getting right at that edge where they're going to just maintain the very bare bone sports. But, you know, I saw some of this coming with some of the rules that we're headed towards, the name, image, likeness, treating student athletes maybe as employees, the monitoring costs. It is very expensive for these colleges to house all these sports that lose money. I mean, that's the truth. And the truth is, I mean, a lot of these coaches, I mean, you'll have a women's basketball coach making $800,000 a year. The assistant's making $150,000, $200,000. There's a lot of money going into these programs that are losing money, and it's really, really tough. And then now football's taking a hit, right? They're going to go, I think, but it's going to be like half-capacity crowds. They're going to be losing money. Ticket sales are down a little bit. People aren't watching the sports. They're feeling that crunch, and they're just having to cut sports.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. And as we continue to see programs get their – you know, have cuts and changes. You know, we'll continue to try to monitor that as best we can. But gosh, we just, our heart just breaks for the Bowling Green community and for any community that's having to go through this difficult time.
Yeah, there's nothing good about it. We just hope maybe that program can come back. But we just feel for all those people that have lost their jobs and their spots.
Yeah. All right. Well, another great episode, episode 29. Next episode's kind of a big one.
Yeah, I mean, we're AP and Spence, and we're two lawyers talking sports, and we will hit on whatever's relevant. We want to talk what's in the headlines. We want to talk what's going on this week. And COVID-19 has been a theme of ours for the last month and a half or so, but that's because it's dominating the headlines, and it's ever-changing. And then we talked about veteran stuff this week. Next week, we're going to have some exciting stuff that's going to be relevant and in the headlines. And we've been tracking closely on these sports starting and football and the NFL and the NBA and this reopening, this massive reopening. And we're holding Kate Brown, Governor Kate Brown in Oregon, to the fire. I mean, if Oregon's not competitive, Oregon Duck football, you know, with Ohio State, you got to look at Kate Brown.
That's right. That's right. Well, I'll hold off on blaming Kate Brown too much, but you can if you want. But yeah, we'll continue to monitor this. We'll continue to keep an eye on these different programs being canceled. And of course, if anything pops up as far as the NCAA violations, we'll talk about those as well. And feel free, if any listeners out there is interested and has any questions, feel free to shoot us an email, follow us on Twitter, we'd love to interact. We love interacting with our fans and with people who are listening. So feel free to email us, call, ask us any questions.
Absolutely. Everybody have a great week.
Stay safe out there.